Om Shanti. It's really lovely to be here. I've only just arrived a few hours ago, and I was thinking, how many times have I visited Mount Abu? I've lost count, but I do know that it's always so lovely to be here in this really special atmosphere. And I don't know about you, but yesterday morning's Muli was really touching, the Avyakt Muli. And I read it in Sydney. It feels like days ago to me because it's only yesterday. But one thing Baba said, which I found really special, was that we're recording our eternal part now. Whatever I'm doing now, every millisecond is really predicting what part I am, my eternal recording in the future. How deep and profound is that? And I was just thinking that I'm really happy that in my recording is this visit to Madhuban, are these repeated visits to our beautiful home with this wonderful family. We are all on this incredible journey, and sometimes for me, Baba talks about the destination of becoming pure, becoming a deity, etc. And sometimes I feel I'm in love with the process, the whole journey, this incredible journey of learning, however challenging it may be along the way. And how can we describe our life? There's probably hundreds of ways. It's a life where we're moving on a journey from a body-conscious state of mind to a soul-conscious state of mind, from impurity to purity, from a soul that's so vulnerable and easily influenced to a soul that's unshakable and stable. But also the journey from belief to being, which is really also an extraordinary journey which all of us are on and still on. We're all traveling. And sometimes our experiences in Brahman life really emphasize this, what we're learning. And one experience I had was in my childhood days in London. It was mentioned that I took my spiritual birth there when this center was just so tiny. And one day we had an appointment to see a man who was in BBC religious television. I can't remember his name and can't even remember what part he played. But I went with Daddy and Denise Ben, and we drove to a little church in South London. He was living in a little church or working there. And you know, I was very new in Gyan, and the impression I have, and it's a long time ago, was when we walked into his office in this little church, I've never seen so many books in a room. All the walls to the ceiling were like covered in books. So many. It was like a library inside his office. On the floor, there were stacks of books. On the table, his desk, there was books. He was obviously an incredible scholar. Knew so much, had read so much about so many religions, but just took one look at his face, and you could see that the knowledge hadn't translated into a state of being. Because his face didn't radiate a calmness, a peace, or a contentment. And Daddy was there with us. And I remember we listened to him, and Daddy was sitting there in such a humble way, but her face was just glowing and radiating. It was really sort of the embodiment of being. And I really thought how sometimes, you know, this journey is to step out of the belief stage into the being stage. And even one other experience I had, it was about 7 or 8 years ago when the World Parliament of Religions was happening in Melbourne, and Daddy was there once again. And she was in a session with a rabbi, and this rabbi was quite an entertaining person. And he said that there's three things: information, knowledge, and wisdom. He said of himself, "I have lot of information, a little knowledge, and no wisdom." I think he was being very humble, actually. But it's interesting, isn't it? We live in a world of information. You can Google words like love or peace, and these days you get almost 1 billion results. There's so much information out there. Knowledge is the philosophy, knowledge are the theories, knowledge is the beliefs. But wisdom is when we begin to live it and become it and be it. Wisdom is really the state of being, which we're really all aspiring to. And I even remember once Daddy saying a few years ago, which really touched me, she said, "The ultimate result of all knowledge is to be completely loving." Don't you find that special? That we study, we learn, we absorb truth, we bring truth into our depth, but how is it expressed? How does it emerge out of my consciousness? It's a state of being of love. It's almost like we convert the truth into this state of love, this state of being. And that's our journey, that's our incredible journey. And belief is important. And what is belief? To me, it's a state of awareness when I find my truth. When I find my truth and I absorb my truth, I relate to it. This is who I am. This is where I belong. It creates this state of awareness of belief. But being, what is being? It's a state of awareness when I live my truth. When I'm actually not just thinking about it, believing it, preaching about it, but it really becomes who I am. And this journey from belief into being, what is the journey really? What is this sort of journey from belief into being? I think for me, it's often I've thought that it's like a journey from my intellect. My intellect understands God's truth. That in itself is an incredible virtue. But it begins the journey of that truth penetrating my thoughts, penetrating my feelings, penetrating my attitude, penetrating my vision, penetrating my behavior, so that I begin to convert that knowledge in the intellect into an expression is of who I am. It's actually this fundamental sort of expression of this fundamental me inside. And sometimes I even think of it as the ultimate state of spiritual power. Because I remember once Baba defined spiritual power as when my thoughts equal my actions. You know, I have a lot of aspiring thoughts. I want to be like this. I want to, you know, you have that vision of a place you want to be. Not so much what you want to say or do, but what you want to be. And when I see myself being that, that's the state of where I'm of a powerful soul, that my aspirations are really coming into my thinking and my behavior. But perhaps ultimately, the journey of belief into being is this wonderful journey to become an angel. Whose favorite image is to be an angel, can I ask? Basically, it's always been mine. And what is it that's so incredibly attractive about an angel, because an angel is just a state of being. You don't think of an angel speaking or preaching or philosophizing, but an angel is really living the form of God's truth, which is why we're all here, to become that. And many times I love to sort of think of the steps on the journey, because this journey has many steps, and sometimes I've had the thought that the first step is really the step from body conscious to Brahman. That's a huge step, you think. Complete change of lifestyle in so many ways. And I think the foundation of that step is a belief in Baba's truth. And so it's like we really step into that, shall we say, stage. And it supports me because we get power from belief. The second step is really from, I think, Brahman to serviceable soul. When we really begin to realize that God's come to transform the world, I want to lend my time, my money, my energy, my thoughts, my words, my actions. But often the foundation of that stage is still my role. I'm still sort of identifying with being a server. And we know that carries many ups and downs. But I think that the next step is from serviceable to angel, where I don't think of service as really doing. I don't think of service as really organizing and planning. It's an expression of who I am, which is really an angel. And I think that so many of us are at this point. We've done service for a long time. We feel this angelic stage pulling us. It's pulling us. I don't know, you know that feeling. It's almost like something's pulling me in my sanskars to step up, step into that state of being where people get the message from a glowing face, from a drishti of mercy, from such a sense of compassion. And we know that this is a long journey, I think. It's the journey of our life, and it's the journey of our learning to convert truth into experience. And I've always been fascinated by this journey myself, because I've often mentioned that my year or two, a few years before Gyan, I was a traveler, like many here. And I wandered the world, literally, for a few years, living in religious communities in Asia, in India, the Middle East, Africa, and Europe. And I lived with all religions. What I found was that I loved what people said. There were so many beautiful things. And people had such powerful beliefs in their particular faith or tradition. But my question was always, how do you experience? How do you sort of like convert a belief into an experience? And when I got to London and I was still on my search, wandering around there, I went to a place in central London, in Hyde Park Corner, called the Spiritualist Association of Great Britain. And I met Daddy and Gentibin there, and instantly I could see something in them. There was a being, a state of being. There was a state of experience. It showed. And instantly that attracted me. And it's why I think often, you know, really people do pick up the feelings from us. People do pick up subtle things. And it's those things that really often inspire them more than even what we say. And it was then that I really began to feel that meditation is converting the theory into a state of being. Meditation, we take God's knowledge, we listen to God's truth. But meditation is the practice of converting it into a state of being inside. And that's a real art form. And many times I sort of, when I'm sharing with non-BKs even, I often say the method of meditation, the first step is to know. The second step is to believe. And the third step is to experience. And it's like, I know I'm a soul. I have faith that I'm a soul, but so does 80% of the world's population. But when I experience myself, it creates a state of being, of peace. It automatically converts the truth into a feeling. I become the form of that feeling. And this is really Baba's teaching. This is Baba's methodology. To sit in silence and with the power of elevated thought, convert it into the power of an elevated feeling. And that's the thing that really begins to sustain me. And one experience I often share, because it has such an impact on me, was when we all came, we had the double foreigner season in 1985, I think it was. And we were meeting Baba and Om Shanti Bhavan. And I don't know how many foreigners used to come. I can't remember the season in those days. But there was a few hundred of us. And Baba told us all to do the course again. Baba told all the foreigners to do the course again. Does anyone remember that? And he called it the Realization Course. And Baba's words still are etched in my mind when he said to the double foreigners, he said, you know the knowledge, you believe the knowledge, you teach the knowledge, but you don't experience the knowledge. And that was something, you know how sometimes something so simple, Baba says, just went boing, so deeply in me. That's what this life is about, actually. And then Baba went on to say that each point of knowledge has an associated experience, state of being. In this world, when people have knowledge, they think that's the end point. Once I know, that's it. I know. We have a world of experts who know so much. But in Brahman life, that's the absolute beginning, where our then process is to convert the knowing into the feeling, to take it out of a belief to an experience of peace, an experience of love, an experience of belonging. And we all know that takes time. And I began to then think that when Baba says, children, churn the knowledge, he's actually saying, children, you know, create a state of being. Children, experience the knowledge. Because that's our journey, to convert the theory, which we've grown up in an environment where we understand things in an intellectual way, but it's taking it from the intellect. That is so necessary, but taking it from the intellect so that I feel it and I experience it, which is really the journey. And that's why many times I feel the first step is to know. The second step is to believe. We can do that in 1 week. But the next 998 steps, the rest of my BK life, is educating myself how to convert it into a feeling, convert it into a state of being, convert it into a spiritual experience. Because sometimes I think this is the great difference between gyan and bhakti, between religion and spirituality. Because religion is more about knowing and believing. And often when people have faith, that's it, I have faith. And when I have faith in a particular thing, then I can become quite dogmatic and fundamentalist. Sometimes I think of it as a two-dimensional thing. You know, when you have two dimensions, just length and breadth, it's flat. It's flat. There's no depth. So sometimes with faith, it gives some support, but there's no real substance or depth. But I'd say spirituality is three-dimensional. It's knowing, believing, and becoming, or being, or experiencing. And the more I experience, I go deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's what makes the soul very spiritually rich and powerful, when I'm learning that art form to convert it into experience. Because I can remember observing myself and thinking that the way we're brought up is that we're brought up to think in certain ways, our education, the cultures which we're all from. So we're taught how to think in a rational way, which is very helpful. A logical, systematic, rational way. That's sometimes, I feel, the legacy of science, which is very beneficial. We're taught how to think in a creative way. We take an idea and let it grow and embellish. Creativity is wonderful. I think we can even learn how to, be positive, think in a more positive way. But in a way, Baba is teaching us experiential thinking, where I take a belief and I think it through to an experience, so to speak. And along that journey, I think there's less thinking and more, delving into the feeling and the experience. It's like an education, because I think we've lost that art. I felt I had. You come into Gyan, you have a random experience. You just sit one day and some incredible thing happens. A week later, something else amazing happens. 6 months later, something incredible happens. And then, for the rest of my Brahman life, not that much. Not much newness happens. And so I become very routine, and I go back to more believing, sitting and believing, rather than sitting and actually being, which is really where Baba wants us to be. And I remember once having the thought or discussion with a few others that, am I a religious BK or am I a spiritual BK? Am I a religious BK or am I a spiritual BK? And I think most of us will say, well, I'm a spiritual BK, because when we have images of religion, it's about worship and it's about devotion and it's about images and things that we don't really practice. But what has framed my sanskaras? When I step into Brahman life, what do I carry with me? I carry the remnants of half a cycle of religion, half a cycle of devotion, half a cycle of belief. And this has really framed my thinking. And it can be, very, very powerful thinking. When I come to Baba, what has the most influence? Is it my golden-aged sanskaras or my copper-aged sanskaras? I would say first, it's my copper-aged sanskaras that really start to kick in. And so I think religion is more about belief and spirituality is more about being. And religion, I think, has framed our sanskaras so strongly that even in Brahman life, sometimes we start, we have a few experiences, and then we go back to our old habit. I feel secure in knowing and believing. And it's like I can live Brahman life like a devotee. And I think we all know it's very easy to do that. Very easy to sort of establish myself. I feel quite comfortable, but I'm more just going along based more on faith and belief than newness. Because I would say that religion can become a habit and spirituality is about newness. And how easy is it to become habitual in my patterns within this life? I know for me how easy it is. And recently I've been really thinking how newness is so essential. And where does newness really come from? It actually comes from churning knowledge. And more recently I've really become aware of the importance of churning knowledge and this constant delving into churning. And I think that if you look at Brahma Baba, we've heard the stories that sometimes children would go into his room in the early morning and he'd say, "Child, don't disturb me, I'm preparing food for the children, or I'm cooking food for the children." Really lovely. And we all know with Daddy Jenki, Don't you find it amazing? It's just any time she can just, it's like her intellect, whenever it's free. And I've often thought about this for myself recently, that when I'm free, what do I do inside? I think often I think about situations, I process what's happening. But a true Brahman, I think, who wants to go into the state of being, we revert to the churning knowledge rather than, you know, processing life, how I feel, what people have said, what people have done. Actually, I think that takes up a huge amount of our mental space rather than when I'm free, I go into God's truth and exploring God's truth. And it really came home to me once in my early days too, because when I first started, there was no English Moli. In the 1970s, there was no English Moli. And so when we started in London, a few of us who were English speaking, there was some English Molis, but they were about one page long, double spaced typing. Took about 4.5 minutes to read. Because the person who translated them just said, oh, they'll like this bit, they'll like this bit. But actually, it wasn't the full Moli. And so we used to sit, Jenti Ben would sit on the floor and we would sit around her looking. She would write the Moli as Daddy or someone would read it and we would be looking over her shoulder and taking notes. And then she began to read it and I began to take it word for word because I used to send a copy to Australia because there was a little group in Australia who were just starting. And so their morning Moli was reading my handwriting. But what happened was, I at that time, and you've heard Daddy talk about this, that she said that when she started 6 months after many of the other sisters in 1936 or 7, whenever. And so to catch up, she'd read the Moli 6 or 8 or 10 times a day. So I thought, I'll try that, because I had my little book where I'd written it word for word. And it was what I observed was that I would listen to it in the class and write it down, and it's enjoyable. The second time I began to read it, I would say I started to see all the different points. You know how Baba jumps from point to point and how they connect. You know, he'll talk about, you know, the cows in the golden age, and then he'll talk about, you know, putting up a poster on the street or something like that. You know, he jumps from thing to thing. And I started to see the connection. The third reading, I started to see the deeper themes. But really by the fourth reading, I could see it. I was becoming more soul conscious. And by the fifth reading, I felt it was an experience. And by the sixth reading, honestly, it was almost like I was in yoga. And I began to realize this is the method of meditation. It's just going so deep into truth that you have an experience of being close to Baba and being in yoga. This is actually God's method. And the more my mind is engaged with meditation, I mean engaged with churning, it's not really intellectually revising the points at all. It's actually converting it into a state of being. It's the journey from belief into being. That's what really churning is about. And so religion and spirituality, our frame, our sanskars have been framed by religion. And sometimes I think religion closes the mind and spirituality opens the mind. Sometimes when I have a whole belief system inside, it gives a sense of security, but it often means that others who are different from my belief system, I reject them. And the paradox often is that often religious people can be the most intolerant people of all, but I think, once again, when we go on the journey with Baba and we start to go and absorb his truth into my being, I think we will start to accept everybody. You know, when it becomes a state of being, really every human soul is my brother, no matter what. And it's not just an intellectual belief, it becomes a feeling which I give them. And so, you know, even I'd say religion sometimes is like a product, and spirituality is a process. You know, religion, you get the whole product, the belief system, the clothing, the rituals, it's all the whole product. But spirituality is a whole process and a whole journey. It's this constant learning. But we can make it a product. We can just make it like a sort of, this is who I am, I'm a BK, and a BK does this, and a BK believes this, and, you know, we start to look at others in a different way too. And I think that, you know, we're really on this journey, and it's a constant journey. And I think one of the most challenging things is when I, in a sense, stop finding newness or stop learning and become a bit stuck. Because I find that our big challenge these days is that subtly, in the most subtle way, we end up in these comfort zones. Because life is so challenging out there that we sort of move towards a comfort zone without realizing it. And things which challenge me, I tend to avoid. And I become so clever in designing a life where I'm not really challenged by things, because actually when we're challenged, we learn and we move and we change. And, you know, I do find it's very easy to do that even within my Brahman life. Sometimes I feel I'm going quite nicely, I'm quite stable, but often it's because I've avoided the things which sometimes make me feel a little bit challenged or a little bit uncomfortable or whatever it may be. Because this whole thing about being, I think, is our great sustenance. Spiritual experience is our great sustenance. What would you say, what's your experience when you feel really motivated and when you feel really enthusiastic? Often it's when you feel something, you experience something. How many times have you had the experience that when you feel really close to Baba, the connection feels so real, so loved by Baba, there's such a sense of belonging? Or when you feel you're beyond the influence of the drama, you're feeling something, it motivates you to feel more. And I remember once I spent some time in Delhi with Jagdish Bhai, and he was a really extraordinary soul. And I sat and I chatted to him for hours, and I asked him, for me, someone like me, what do you think is the most important thing on this journey? And he straight away said, new experiences, new experiences. And I really thought about that, yes, that as in our spiritual childhood, there's a lot of newness in our lifestyle, in our relationships, and even when we meditate, we have special experiences. But often after a while, they seem to get less and less. And so we're just sustained more by the belief than by new experiences. And often I think, I remember once Ramesh Bhai saying, our brother Ramesh, who just only a few weeks ago passed away, he once did a survey of the Brahmin family in India, and he found many meditate in the same way as they did when they did the course. In other words, the way you learn at the beginning is the way you continue. You know, the tape. You almost follow the meditation tape in that way. There's not the creativity. And therefore, I think we can get a little bit bored. And when we get a little bit bored, then the love to go deep into silence and to experience actually, you know, is forgotten. And I think, you know, why is spiritual experience so important? Why is this state of being so important? Because I think that the nature of the mind is to want to have experience. I think it's the way our minds are. Our minds need to experience. And if I'm not really experiencing or being so much with Baba, then I think the mind will revert to the old methodologies of experiencing. It will subtly start to be attracted to the old ways of spiritual experience. like a sensual experience. Look at our world today. It's just a blast for the senses. You think about it. The movies they make, the sounds, it's just a phenomenal sensual experience. Like last year I was in Sydney and we went to see, they light up the entire city, all the buildings, all the parks, all the trees. It's absolutely amazing. It's like you're in this incredible fantasy land, you know? It's like, how powerful is this sensual experience? And sometimes we can be pulled back to enjoying life through the senses. When you really think, the tiny, subtle soul is living in a prison of just finding experience through the senses, or emotional experience. And that's what we get from relationships. Sometimes we sort of let go relationships, old relationships, but we rebuild them in more subtle forms because we get some experience from them. Whether it is, you know, the experiences of company or friendship, or which is good, but sometimes it can sort of creep over into attraction and dependence because it's experience. Once again, the mind wants to experience. So if I'm not getting it from Baba, then it will subtly start to look elsewhere, even intellectual experience. But sometimes people want to go really deeper into philosophy and things like that rather than getting it from Baba. And I think Baba's way is this meditation where we move from belief and start to experience. And what Baba really wants is to dip ourselves into the essence of purity. Taste it, feel it, become it, be it. Dip ourselves into the essence of love. Taste it, feel it, become it. Because when we taste it, we know where to go back again. Dip ourselves, it's like immersing ourselves. And when I immerse myself, I'm becoming it and I'm starting to feel it and live it. And this is really, I think, where Baba wants us to go. And some years ago, I had this sort of image for myself that my mind is like a laboratory. And I'm like a spiritual scientist where I have to practice different things to create the state of being. Because we know, sometimes we think, oh, this sounds great. Yeah, I really want to be. And you try and you try and you still don't really feel it. And so this experimentation, I would say, in the laboratory of my mind. And I've thought a lot about the mind recently because my whole world happens in my mind. My mind is the venue for my life. My mind is the meeting place of everything. How I'm feeling, my thinking, my attitudes, my relationships, my relationship. Everything is meeting in my mind. How am I caring for my mind? How am I looking after my mind? How do I keep it in a state of sustaining being so that I feel nurtured? Because this is the real sustenance we want. And the image I have is my mind is a sacred place because it's the only thing we have complete control over. We don't have control over really anything else in life, but theoretically and ultimately it's the place where I have control. And I've thought a lot about, because I read those renunciation mulis again, which we keep revising, and they're very close to the hearts of so many BKs. And Baba was talking about, you know, renouncing the influence of the senses, how this mind is sitting there, but there's these entry points into the mind through my ears. And I've just been watching. I hear something and it enters the mind and starts to drive thinking. I see something and I absorb it through into my mind, and what I'm seeing starts to drive my thinking and my perception. So in a way, my eyes, this is what Baba means by my eyes are controlling my thinking. I'm not controlling my sense organs. My senses are driving me rather than me. And that's why meditation is an extraordinary thing, because when I sit to meditate, I'm creating the thoughts I want. When I sit to churn, I'm not just reacting to life. I'm not just allowing life to tell me what to think. I'm just creating the thoughts within my mind that I want. And in this space, there's two things going on as far as I can see. There's my mind, which is the creation of thought, and there's feelings. There's the feeling. And even as far as I'm aware, there's a debate in psychology these days. What comes first, the thought or the feeling? I'm not sure it really matters, actually. But, you know, what comes first is we think and then we feel something. We feel something and that creates thoughts too. So this process is really happening inside. And what Baba is really teaching us is to start to use pure thought, elevated thought, God's truth, and convert it into a feeling. So my sacred space just feels really warm, and it's just being calm, being light, being easy, so sweet. It's truth that is going to take me into that place. And I sometimes have the image of how will my mind be in the golden age? How will my mind think? I think it'll be so different. It'll be unimaginably different from now. I think that there'll be minimal thought and maximum being. There'll be just sometimes, you know, I often, you know, there's slow motion films of a drop just going very slowly into a pond. And when it hits the pond, it just slow ripples come out. I think, but like one thought will hit the mind, and then the being, it'll just instantly convert into feeling, a feeling of love, a feeling of belonging, a feeling of well-being, a feeling of whatever it may be. And that's the state of the mind. Whereas if we look at the state of mind now, the less I can feel and be, the more we think. And that's our problem these days. We just overthink. And the more we think, we suppress a capacity to be, a capacity to feel inside. I think thinking is our enemy at the moment. It may sound strange, in the sense that it's my best friend and can be my worst enemy. Because we're at this point where just a little thing happens and it just generates so much overthinking, and we have no control over it. So my sacred space is taken over by another power, so to speak, rather than me putting a full stop to that and bringing it back into that state of being or that state of feeling, which is so sweet. And I think we have to really experiment in the laboratory of my mind. And this is churning. I start with ideas and I express them and I play with them. And as I go deeper into them, they start to convert into feelings and experiencing. Really, this is Baba's method of how to meditate. And it's not just an intellectual thing. It's like extracting the beingness from truth. And ultimately, the aim of knowledge is to take me into a state of being. Knowledge isn't an end in itself. Belief isn't an end in itself. It's a vehicle to be or to become or to experience. And when I think we develop that laboratory of the mind, we do experiments. And, you know, I've often shared, because I've done experiments over the years, and I love to do them one thing over a period of time, because I think you start to see a real movement, a real change in yourself. The simplest of experiments around aspects of soul consciousness or relationship with Baba. But the question to keep asking, how does it feel? What is the state of being? Am I just churning in an intellectual way, or is my churning taking myself back to my original state of being? Because that's when the churning is as I think it should be. And Baba once gave a lovely muli, and he gave us a formula for being, a formula. And it was very, very simple. Baba said, become a point, apply a point, remember a point. And Baba said that's the formula to experience. And try it. I've tried it. Become a point. I sort of feel the more the absolute foundation of spiritual practice and effort is to become detached from my body, become bodiless. That's the sort of bread and butter of effort. It's the thing we just need to do constantly. My experience is the more I'm detached from my body, the more I enter the world of being. It's almost like I enter the world of experience. It's like the fundamental first step. The second step, apply a full stop. And this is what I was just saying, that I think our big issue today is overthinking. Just too much thinking, too much analysis is an important quality. But if my mind just can't stop analysing, it becomes analysis goes from satopradhana to tamopradhana. It's like I have to, you know, use my thought to take me into the state of being rather than just overthinking, you know, too much in that way. And applying a full stop, it needs a lot of spiritual strength to do that. But I think for me, I found when I see where thought patterns take me, and I think often we know that we start some thoughts, we know they're going to take me into a not so happy place or a dark place. If there's a conflict or something and my mind starts to engage, we know it's going to take me to a place where I'm not going to feel so good. I am going to be, but I'll be unhappy. I'm going to be unhappy or not feel so good. So apply a full stop. And when I've done that, I've become a point, I've applied a point, it's opening the door to remembering the point, remembering Baba, experiencing Baba's love. It's almost like I've closed the sense organs to the world, I've closed my memory track, and then God can enter. God can really enter into my being. I'm allowing Baba in. Otherwise, unless I close up all the other things, my mind just takes over and I can't really absorb from Baba. I was remembering only recently that when Baba was meeting one of the older Australian brothers in the early days, Baba, he's a very creative soul. And Baba said to him, you know, he asked Baba a question. I can't even remember the question about service or something or direction, what direction to go in. Baba said, sit in Amrit Vela with a plain intellect. That means an intellect not driven by my own thinking, not driven by my own story, not driven by so self-absorbed in my life and how I'm feeling and what they're doing. And, you know, that's often, I'm so absorbed in that, I just step away from that. And then Baba can point me in the right direction. And then often I think that quickly takes me into a state of being. And so the mind is a laboratory. I need to experiment because the more we experience, we be, I think we feel sustained. That's my experience. You know, when your mind, this sacred space, is washed in peace, washed in love, washed in happiness, washed in joy, all these feelings really make you feel strong. And the more I feel, the more I'm moving towards that stage of being the angel. And, you know, how sweet is that stage of being an angel? And when I was early in Gyan also, so many things happen in the early days. But I had, I think, an experience a couple of times of going into trance. And I didn't even realize what it was at first, but when I talked to a few of the seniors, and it was very simple. I just felt I traveled like an infinite distance. It was a strange sort of sensation. You know how Baba says, the subtle region is beyond the sun, moon and stars. It was a sense of physical movement. And I just came in front of Baba's, Abhupdada's face. Just shoulders, face. And really the beauty of that face was indescribable. And really all you could say, it was a face of an angel. It was just glowing. It was just alive and radiant, absolutely radiant with purity and love. And I really saw that state of being, you know, that Baba state of being. It's just so extraordinary. Just seeing that was so inspiring and so transforming. And I think that, you know, the angel is that being of love. And ultimately, you know, this journey, we study, we learn, we practice, we serve, but ultimately we come to a place where I just become the instrument to love and give love. And I don't know about you, but I always feel when I'm in that state, I feel completely content, because it feels like that's truth, to be loving regardless of what people are like. You feel like you've come home to a place which is true and how I should be. And then, you know, just through who I am, my state of being is really serving this world through my face, through my vibrations, through my, you know, smile, you know, as Baba puts it, whatever it may be, people are experiencing. And this, I think, is the next phase of service. It's really where we're really in that state of being, where living in that state of spirituality. Anyway, I don't know. I'm not sure what happens these days. Is there time for a question or two? And then we're going to have half an hour of meditation. But if anyone would like to ask something, please feel free. So I think the question is, really, Baba talks about a Brahman, a pure Brahman, and an angel. Is that right? The Brahman.
It's on. Yes, you know, we talk of Brahmins, the Brahmin religion, the Brahmins.
Oh.
Pure Brahmin, as Baba defines Brahmins, who are the pure Brahmins, and angel.
So you mean the Lokic religion, the Brahman?
No. We had a class this morning, and there were some questions in the mind about, from Brahmins, what is a pure, are we Brahmins? So are we really pure Brahmins as the purest Brahmin? Who is a pure Brahmin as Baba sees us?
Oh. Well, I would say that a pure Brahman is really one who simply lives to the image that Baba said. So they have all relationships with one. I would say that's the first step. And they've really put themselves under the canopy of one. You know, I think that we're so influenced. I think the realization of most of us is that we love Baba, we have faith in Baba, I'm committed to Baba, but I'm so easily influenced by so many things, my karmic story, people's behavior, and I think still to this day, for most BKs, we're so affected by each other. I think that's why Baba has this family, to move beyond this addiction, and it is an addiction to taking some subtle form of sorrow from others. And I think it's like when I put myself fully under the influence of one, absorbed in one, then automatically I'm engaged with others but uninfluenced by them. And I feel often we think, how can I be detached? The pure Brahman is detached. And I think so essential for us these days. But it's a natural result of being so engaged with one Baba. The mind's so absorbed in one, I just naturally go beyond the other influences. I'm not trying to be detached, trying not to be affected. I'm just absorbed in one at this time, and it's a natural consequence. And I think that really creates a lot of purity. But I also feel that, you know, purity is a state when my whole life is based on truth, you know, and that's the truth of all relationships with one, the truth of Baba's directions. It's like when truth is expressed in life, it becomes purity and I become a pure Brahman. But still I think that it's a lot to do, I feel, with this journey of trying to deal with my ego, which is, you know, a big journey, that we can be a fairly pure Brahman, but still my ego desires recognition and praise and things from people. And I think really a pure Brahman, which when I move into the angel stage, where really the soul feels totally sustained by Baba, and I have the courage to step into that. So I'm living with the family, I'm a part of the family, I'm connected to the family, I love the family, but I'm not influenced. I'm really absorbed and, you know, influenced by one. And that's the journey. And I feel when I'm really under the influence of one, even while maintaining loving, respectful relationships with everybody, then I think being is natural. Because when I'm under that influence, the state of Baba's being, you know, I sometimes think that knowledge transforms my intellect, but yoga transforms my feelings, my being. And when I plug into Baba as an unlimited source of being, being loving, being pure, being, I sort of feel that too. And my relationship with Baba isn't more thinking, because often I think that when we meditate, we just think. And when we think good thoughts, we feel a bit better. But actually, meditation is, I don't know, it's going so deep into the truth that most, there will be thoughts, but minimal. The fragrance in the sacred space of the mind is such a state of being, and that radiates through my body as well. Anyway, it's 7 o'clock. This is a very quick question, if that's okay.
Om Shanti. So Baba says, become loving and detached. Right, and the Hindi one says, become niyara, piyara bano or niyara bano, you know. But then this is, I'd like to see the process, you know, how you actually, you know, do this task of becoming detached and loving. Because in grahasthi, you know, when we live with a family, you know, and we have the creation, you know, the children and so on. Yes, it's all very well, you know, to become detached. But then the family, the children will say, oh, but I think there's something wrong with you, Dad, and so on. You know, you're not loving me, you know. Are you just throwing me or dumping me, you know?
You know, yes, I think this is probably one of the most common questions in the Brahmin world. Because, and I'm just going to have to answer quickly because I know we've got half an hour meditation.
How do you train the mind?
You know, once Baba said, to be truly loving, you have to be detached. Detachment protects my capacity to love. Because you can love in all circumstances. But I think that it's the most misinterpreted virtue in Brahmin life. And because we don't understand it, what we think is detachment becomes aloofness, a non-caring. We know it's a common discussion, and you could probably spend a whole session on just this subject, what actually is detachment and what is love. Because I think detachment, often the belief is wrong, and so in the state of trying to practice it, it comes out all wrong. It appears, and so a lot of people feel, well, the way you've taught the Brahma Kumaris have taught you, have made you really, but I believe that if I'm accurately detached according to Baba, I will be very loving, very caring, very close, very concerned, good communicator, but totally and utterly uninfluenced. I'm not absorbing any of the sorrow, and yet I'm still sympathetic to it at the same time. So it's a very subtle state of being. Okay, we must finish there. So thank you so much, everyone, and we'll have a beautiful half hour of meditation. Thank you. Thank you.